We are talking about the absent father syndrome, which is a natural evolvement from a poor father God concept. And it's reinforced by a problem in our Western society today where the father is quite often absent from the home. Now, the question has been brought several times, what about an absent mother syndrome? We have not dealt with that as such in our manuscript. We need to and we will, but we might mention it now. The absent mother syndrome will produce similarities, but on the reverse side. And if you look back to the role distortion patterns, wherever a mother or a father absent, what it does is produces in a person's life either a paternal affection drive or a maternal affection drive. And those drives are extremely strong in an individual's life. Quite often they try to find in many people what was denied them by the one person, either father or mother. Now, I have noticed where there has been the absence of a poor mother-to-child relationship on the part of girls, that they develop very strong motherly instincts. They make fantastic mothers. But invariably, they will marry a person who comes from a similar background. The guy will be looking for a mother-type person. Now, they don't formalize this in their minds. They don't look at the person they're attracted to as a mother figure, as a father figure, or so on. What happens is that the girl is attracted to this person who so often is either has no mother whatsoever or has been totally dominated and controlled by an overprotective mother. And the marriage takes place, and what you have in there is a mother figure with a role reversal going on. Instead of a husband-wife, you have mother-child. And invariably the wife will say, well, the biggest child of all is my husband. Then what you have quite often in the more critical cases is that there is sibling rivalry between the father and the children. And that is always disastrous. One case history we had that came in over a period of time was a man who had been brought up by an extremely possessive mother who did not allow the son to have any relationship with the dad. They were having problems. The mother ruled his life. He married a girl who came from a background who did not have a good mother-child relationship and had very strong maternal affection drive. She was really a mother's mother. Their marriage was fine, except for one thing. There was a constant clash between the mother-in-law and the wife over the control of the husband. However, when the children came, that's when the problems really became acute, because this man was jealous of his children. And he did everything in his power from the time they were an inch long to express his displeasure and hostility toward them. Now they were in their teens, and they were having problems of their own. The wife and husband had been divorced, gotten together, divorced. It was tragic. They believed that their father was absolutely crazy. And in many ways, as far as a normal relationship, he was to them because of the way he treated them. He hated them. He had this extremely strong sibling jealousy and rivalry to his own children. We had another case of a wife who came in and says, is it normal for, and I think we've mentioned this before, to twist in discipline the children? Should her husband twist their hands and their feet and their fingers and so on? And she described an older brother who was beating up the younger one, being a bully, and that's exactly what was happening. In this case, the man did not have a mother. He had married a mother, and certainly, sure enough, his wife had come from a similar background, and she had strong motherly instincts and was the marriage was fine until the children came along. Then the sibling rivalries came in. So
the father is jealous of the children. The
question was asked that if the father is jealous of the child, could that indicate a maternal lack as he was growing up? And it certainly does indicate that he did not have a mother. We have noticed also that girls who come out of homes where the mother is critical and jealous of them, even though they have a mother, produces certain problems. And they seem to always champion men or young men who are from a similar background. And quite often, they'll engage in premarital sex because that's what the young man wants. And yet, it becomes, as you counsel with them, a very apparent mother-child relationship. And the attraction of the girl to the boy, even though he's usually very weak in character, is that he needs me. And it's a mother thing. Those marriages never work out. It's really unfortunate. Now, we have talked about the AS syndrome, and if the problem is acute, a son looking for a father can be induced toward homosexuality. A son without a mother can be very promiscuous. A daughter who did not have a daddy or the absence of a father there tends to be very promiscuous, as she tends to look for a daddy in many men. Or if the mother was absent, she can be often drawn into lesbianism, especially in our day and age where there is tremendous pressures for acceptance of things that the Bible dogmatically states as extremely wrong, such as homosexuality, lesbianism, and so on. One case of a young man who was a transvestite, or a person who dressed like a woman, had come from a background where the father was extremely passive and extremely critical, and the mother very domineering. And he had two sisters, older sisters. And so there was no relationship with dad, only the relationship with the mother, the sisters. His identity was totally female. And therefore, we found that his identity was only through the female sex. He would dress up like that because he literally identified himself as a female, which was very unfortunate. The hard thing for him to realize is that he chose to be that. He was blaming his parents, but he chose to be a transvestite. And to get him to believe that he was accountable for that was very difficult. Okay. Now, we mentioned as we closed last time that a young man's masculinity many times is developed in correlation with his mother's femininity and tempered by the dad's masculinity. We mentioned that a young girl's femininity is correlated and developed by in contrast to the dad's masculinity and tempered by the mother's femininity. Now, when those are lacking, why the problem seems to be somewhat greater with young girls is that a young man, the mother is usually the stable figure in the family, therefore his masculinity is developed, even though the father might be gone. And usually then in his peers, he can temper it somehow there. But a young girl growing up, usually within the framework of the home, does not have anybody, if the father's gone, to contrast the development of her own femininity. And it leaves a real question in her mind, to the degree that quite often a young girl questions her womanhood and she questions her femininity. Well, how do you express that then? Well, by going out and using your feminine wiles. And as I mentioned before, the average age of today of those that I've dealt with, and I've dealt with probably at least 1,000 girls coming out of this, the average age that they first experience sex is 13. It seems that they enter puberty, they're questioning their womanhood, etc., etc. Now, let me stress that these girls do not view themselves as being promiscuous in their mind, even though they're promiscuous in their activity. What they're trying to do is meet that very strong paternal affection drive in their life. They, I would say in 99 hundredths of the case, 99 out of 100, the girls did not want the sex but were willing to accept it simply to be held, to have the security of an emotional relationship. But the men demanded sex. So the payment to be held was for physical relationship. And of course then they had to go through and deal with the guilt and so on. I have dealt with this problem with young girls and young men who were even in Christian service, so it's a very prevalent problem in our society today. As a young person grows up, and if you'll turn with me to chapter 6 and at the bottom of page 31, there's this problem of what we call internalizing. Problems among parents are tended to be internalized by the children. In other words, they blame themselves for the problem. If the dad leaves the home, what is wrong with me that daddy left? I had one situation where a mother brought in her three young daughters, and they were beautiful children. The oldest was 11, one was 8, and one was 6. The oldest girl, who was 11, had beautiful auburn hair. She was just one of the most strikingly beautiful little girls I'd ever met. But as we talked, she turned to me and she was just sobbing, great sobs, and she said, "Why did my daddy hate me so much that he would leave?" She didn't view the problem between the husband and the wife, but that as far as she was concerned, that father hated her. That created then a deep sense of rejection in her. Now the pattern that will normally or usually follow from that girl, as she goes into puberty, will begin to look for a daddy. And of course there are many older men in our society trying to reclaim their youth. And there's this infatuation that a young girl would be interested in an older man. And it blows his mind. And of course the young girl, mixed up with the romantic, looks to that security of an emotional relationship as love. And they'll start an affair. I've yet to know an experience where these type of marriages, usually the first for the girl, second for the man, or third, ever work out. When they get married and say, "I do," it opens up the memory vault and all the past problems come up. They never work. Out of this, of course, we find that the children, because of the sense of rejection, begin to develop a poor self-image. The father-God concept has already been affected because of the fall. It's reinforced by the problem, the father and the mother not being there, and then, of course, they internalize and they begin to view themselves less than what God intended them to be. In a case history, I was speaking to a group of students up in a northern college, and a young lady came up to me afterwards, and as we talked, I found out that there was a serious case of father-child neglect. She was 20, living with a man who was over 40. She was 13 when she had her first sexual experience. As she'd gotten into the relationship, had come to this conference, she was actually in college. The man was a businessman, divorced, who had children older than she. She realized she didn't love him, but he represented a very stable emotional relationship. She really didn't want to have sex. That's the one thing she could do without, but that was part of the bargain. She knew that it wouldn't be a lasting relationship. She knew it was wrong, but the idea and the sense of somebody caring, somebody touching, somebody holding her outweighed everything else. That, as she viewed that, she said, "That is more important to me than anything else." And I have talked to, as I said, scores and scores, both guys and girls, who have this problem. Young man came to me about his wife. They were having very serious problems in their marriage. She was hostile, belligerent, blaming him for the problem. What became apparent that she blamed him, but she was having the affair. We got together, and she seemed to enjoy the disclosure to her husband, the shock. when he found out that that she was having an affair, he found out the person. And he came to me, and he was astounded. He said, "You will not believe this, but that person she's having an affair with could be a dead ringer for her daddy." He said, "Her daddy is bald. He has a white goatee. This man is bald and has a white goatee. They're the same height, approximately the same build, and so on. A dead ringer. She had found a substitute to meet her daddy needs, and it destroyed the marriage. That meant more to her." And so it, again, reinforces how strong this paternal affection drive is, or the maternal affection drive in counseling. Do not underestimate the power of that drive. It's an extremely strong drive. It was out of our counseling that we researched them that led us into what we have termed the absent father syndrome problem. Where this first started out is that we had dealt to some degree with some young girls who had been seduced by their own daddies. There had been an incest problem. And there was tremendous revulsion of the children toward the dad. Later on, as we got into more cases, we noticed that there was, in a number of cases, the same revulsion of wives towards their husbands after sex. And we noticed the similarity between young girls who had been seduced by their daddy and this husband-wife relationship. And so we began to research it. And we discovered then the absence of a father, and led us to the conclusion that these girls were marrying a daddy figure, though unconsciously. And because in these rather critical cases, the more acute cases, this feeling of revulsion came in. And in every case, we found the physical relationship in a marriage that had a pronounced father-child or mother-child relationship was always defective. There was a poor physical or sexual relationship. The background of these cases, we found the absence of a normal father-child relationship. Either the father was gone through his job or divorce. In most cases, the father was an alcoholic, some cases death, so on. Many times there was very much physical abuse. The tragedies that we have come across, one young lady whose father and mother fought constantly. The father was put into prison because he assaulted the wife and tried actually to kill her. Later on, the mother put the children up for adoption, two boys and a girl. When the father got out of prison, he came back, took the two boys, and chose not to take the little girl. It was a case of double rejection. The mother did not want her. The father did not want her. The problems that she had in trying to adjust with this deep sense of guilt that she was wrong, poor self-image, the sense of rejection, and so on. Here was a girl that had been abused in the foster home. All of this, you'll find in your counseling many problems related to this. Now, in our society, the courts almost always have awarded the children to the mother. So usually the father is the one that is gone. Alcoholism has more affected the girls. Now, we're beginning to see a major shift in America today. We're finding now the courts are giving the children back to the father in many cases, and this will cause then an increase of the maternal affection drive. For the first time in the history of America, there are more girls in college than boys. And we're going to find trends changing in the next 5 to 10 years because of this. I think we'll see a great increase both on the part of young men and women who are experiencing the maternal affection drive. We had one case, and this is a case history, where would go back to the absence of a normal affection caring father-child relationship. On page 33 of the manuscript, if you want to follow, a case where the father came into the bedroom to sleep with her, and this first started when she was 7. When she was 10, he first made penetration, And from then on, for over the next period of years, it was almost a nightly occurrence. The father warned her never to tell anybody, that it would crush the mother. He used guilt to keep her silent. This went on from the time she was 7 years of age until she was 17, a period of 10 years. She finally told her boyfriend in high school. The guy was really cool about it. He went to the father, confronted him. He had already made arrangements for him to see a psychologist. So he went to see the psychologist. They became great friends, went out hunting together, and the little girl told me, she said, nobody ever met with me. I don't have it in here, but here was a girl who then had become a Christian. And she had gone to a certain church, and the youth pastor seduced her. And this happened. She had no identity herself, especially to any sexuality that she might have. She related to me a story that she overheard girls talking about sex. And she did not relate that what her father was doing to her was sex. She said, well, I don't know what they're talking about. So she went up to a boy she knew and said, would you have sex with me? Well, of course, he was agreeable. She did not know, and it almost destroyed her to find out he was doing the same thing to her what the daddy was doing to her. How can somebody be that ignorant at this age? It happens. We've had kids who believe that kissing caused pregnancies and became very shaken because they kissed. That would be her real problem if it did. So this ignorance goes on and on. One of the great problems is that in Christian homes, parents do not deal with teaching their children about sex from a biblical viewpoint. And it's a tragedy today that most sex is learned still in the gutter. And they don't learn it in church. They don't learn it from their parents. They learn it in the gutter. And it's completely opposed to biblical teaching. And so here are young people committed to Christ, working in the church many times, but their whole relationship in the sexual area has come from the gutter. So what is right? What is wrong? And I am of the opinion that if the parents cannot teach, the church should. If the church doesn't, then somehow it ought to be done in the schools, but from a Christian perspective. Some of the stuff that I have seen is pure garbage. In fact, in the paper, I think, either last night or the night before, there was a man who was telling of the problems in Oklahoma City area about teenage sex. And he said, the legislature needs to do something about it. I disagree. The church needs to do something about it. He said, sex education needs to come in. And then he quoted some of the material that would be good. I have seen some of the material, and it's straight pornography. The church must stand into this gap. Christian parents must. Because it goes on, and especially if you have an absent father syndrome case, the problems that come up with that. This young girl that we were in our case history, she had a warped sense of who she was, of the mother, of the husband-wife relationship, the whole thing. It took a great deal of counseling to get the role relation straight, to get her own self-image straight. This happens when there is sexual abuse in the home of the child. We have known of cases of sexual abuse of the wife or the mother to the son. And, in fact, the Bible even has a case of that that Paul mentions, I believe, in Corinthians. So this goes on. It always warps a person. Excuse me. One of the most critical cases that I ever had was a young girl that came in who looked like she stepped out of a church choir. And sat down and said that she thought she had a problem. And I said, well, what's the problem? Well, she had slept with 6 different men in the last 6 nights, 30 different men in the last 30 days. I assured her she had a problem. But I refused to see her because she didn't want to talk about Jesus. A year later, she came back, said, look, I really do need help. And I referred her to one of our associate staff. She trusts the Lord, and her life totally changed. And she left that promiscuous activity. However, in her mind, she did not view herself that way. And yet, we find that the story goes back that her father, a religious fanatic, found in a verse it was good for man not to touch a woman. Never in his life did he ever touch that little girl. even as a baby. He touched the boys, good father to the boys, but he never touched that girl. She said, I grew up longing to sit in his lap, but knew that I did not dare. She said, I wanted him to kiss me goodnight, but never would I have ever suggested. And the drive was phenomenal in her life. Today she's happily married, but it shows the problem. Now then, let's go to some of the symptoms, both on the male and the female, of an absent father syndrome. So it can help in making some type of diagnosis here. Now, there are many of them, and so I have listed 45. There could be more, could be less. If you have an absent father syndrome and you find all 45 symptoms there, you would have a critical case. I've yet to find any person that had all 45 of these. You use a system in your counseling where you check off the various things. We find in this that invariably, in the absent father syndrome, that they come from a very strong female background. Now, that can be varying to degrees. The mother could be critical, domineering, controlling. The father passive. That produces a certain set of problems. Normally, where the mother is critical, domineering, demanding, controlling, jealous of the daughter, the daddy is passive. I've noticed cases where the girls went into what was called anorexia nervosa or bulimia, the gorging and vomiting syndrome. I have seen where the father is passive but critical and the mother domineering and controlling. You go into become a transvestite. All kinds of what we call role distortion patterns from here. So that number one and number two, where the mother can be dominant, intimidating, controlling, critical, we find that a person tends to extend into their married life that which they grew up with. And it's never failed in our thousands and thousands of cases that a person from a strong female-dominated family always marries a person from a strong female-dominated family. I find that the tendency is that an older child tends to always marry an older child. I find that in our society, an older the man always tends to marry a younger person. And I find the reason for that quite often is that the age difference makes up for the lack of a control. A young man coming out of a very strong motherly, a mother-dominated role tends to marry a girl somewhat younger, 2 to 4 years younger than he, and that offsets that control. And so he dominates by the very fact of his age. But then when he steps in to the marriage, the age factor disappears. And the problems stem up then because the girl that he married is like the mother so often. Okay, there can and usually is either maternal hostility or dependence. Quite often in the absent father syndrome with the father gone, there is on the part of the man a strong hostility toward the mother or a strong dependence toward the mother. When they get married, the hostility is almost automatically transferred to the wife. And many times then, the dependence of the mother is carried over, so it creates tremendous conflict in the marriage. He never cuts the apron strings. We find that on the part of the man and the girl, these are all the both male and female symptoms. Father's absent or passive. No active relationship. We find, number five, that he lacks emotional maturity and security. It's the same for the girl. Number six, we find that the boy tends to be spoiled and waited on, and that's what he wants quite often, whereas the girl feels neglected. I have seen in situations where the wife is down filing for a divorce and yet has to leave what she is doing with the lawyer to rush home to fix her husband's lunch. And I said, well, why are you doing that? She said, well, he can't do it himself. And the motherly instincts are overruling. As a wife, she's getting a divorce, but the mother, she's home fixing the little boy's lunch. And I couldn't believe this. I've had women who came in who didn't want a divorce. They wanted a contract on their husband's life. and then rush home to wash his socks and make sure that his shirts were ironed and so on. Just blows your mind that how unconsciously, as a wife, they're getting a divorce and still as a mother trying to meet the mother needs. I don't have this down here, but whenever a divorce or the crises take place in the absent father syndrome, the husband many times acts like a young child or boy being robbed of his mother. There is the panic, the desperation, the doing of anything to try to keep the marriage together. And yet they themselves do not want to change. They just cannot stand that rejection. In both cases, there's a very distinct poor self-image. You'll find that the husband tends to be very strong as being a father. That's his strength. The girl is strong in being a mother. There is average to strong mother needs in the part of the husband. Number eight, the strong father needs in the part of the wife. And those obviously are in direct conflict. Number nine, there's a moderate to strong maternal affection drive in the husband and the paternal affection drive in the wife. Now, those are pretty much the same. We get into what we call the interpersonal data as far as symptoms. We find that the male is passive, the female aggressive. We find that the male is indecisive in these situations, the female decisive. We find husband tends to be very perfectionist because stemming from his poor self-image, everything has to be just right. We find the wife tends to be very controlling. We find that the husband, the male, is stoic and non-expressive. We find the female very expressive. We find the male non-communicative. We find that the female very open and transparent. Very interesting in counseling. We find that if you bring the male in and to a male counselor, that there is a very poor rapport established. If you take the girl in to a female counselor, there's very poor rapport established. If you take the male in to an older female counselor, he's very much at home. He relates far better. He opens up to that the same way with the girl to an older male. You have what you have established then in your counseling, the mother-child, father-child relationship. I've seen many a case where the girl would not sit under female counseling, or nor the male sit under male counseling. We find that the husband or the male is usually aggressive sexually within the relationship, that he is very aggressive and will tend to try to buy his wife. Bring her presents. He wants payment for that. And there is an unconscious sense that becomes very strong in the part of the wife, feeling that she is being prostituted. And that is very strong and very revolting to them. Now, the girl or the female is usually very unresponsive sexually within the relationship, but tends to be aggressive outside the relationship in the sexual area. These girls in the maternal or paternal affection drive are tremendously vulnerable to affairs. I'm not sure that I've ever had one in that there wasn't another person involved in the scores and scores of cases of the absent father syndrome that I've dealt with. And there could have been, but I don't remember any right off. We find that the male has a very poor interpersonal leadership role. The girl has a very strong interpersonal relationship role. He excels at being a father. She will tend to question her motherhood and yet at the same time be a very good mother. She is always satisfied with the status quo. Let's don't rock the boat. It's very hard to get a man in the absent father syndrome in for counseling. Only a crisis will drive him in. His fear of failure is so strong that he will have counseling in his mind tantamount to failure. Refuse to come in unless the fear of rejection finally drives him in. I've yet to have a man voluntarily come in the absent father syndrome. He's been forced to come in. The wife usually comes in right at the beginning because she senses something's very wrong. Her needs, the wife, the needs are not being met, especially the sexual are not being met. The husband tends to be very weak in character. The wife tends to be very strong in character. We find that the boy will have this little boy, or the male will have a little boy attitude. One time I took a guy to play handball. Great big all-American type guy, football player. We got into the locker room, and of course there were probably several hundred lockers. And we walked in, he turned to me and he said, "Where should I put my clothes?" But he said it in such a little boy voice. And I thought maybe he was kidding. I said, "Well, we might try a locker." I was being smart aleck. And he looked around and said, "Oh." But then that, of course, triggered my counseling mind. And sure enough, here was a guy who came from an absent father syndrome. Their marriage was characterized by the absent father syndrome. Met his wife. Very delightful. Both of them are delightful. They're doing great today. But she would play the little girl role with me. A little flirtatious. More like in many cases, she would unconsciously slip into it. And I thought, this is interesting. The little boy, little girl role they would unconsciously fall into. In the male's part, and when there were problems, he was always self-righteous. He'd done nothing wrong. The wife was always self-condemning. The husband always had the ostrich syndrome. He stuck his head in the sand, and he hoped the problem would disappear. The girl then always tended to have a gut-level honesty. The male had the ivory tower situation. He was out of touch with the whole situation. He tried to ignore it. That's an offspring of the ostrich syndrome. The wife then always felt frustrated and hopeless that nothing would ever work out. He tended to be intimidated. She was intimidating. And boy, the wife's good at that. He would buy or manipulate wife. The wife would have the sense of being prostituted. Well, we could go on, and it would be better, I think, that a person would look over these. And as you're counseling, you can check these off. And normally on your intake information, you'll see certain factors. If the husband is anywhere from 4 years plus older than the wife, suspect an absent father syndrome. The wife is in and she feels that she is close to insanity in the relationship with her husband, the thing that forces the wife out of the absent father syndrome, where they finally decide to get divorced, is they are very fearful that they're going to lose their sanity. And that's what forces them out. They're very much afraid of that. So look for that. If there is an intense hatred toward their husband, they cannot live in the situation, then usually that is symptomatic of this. Many times we've had to have them live apart for 30 days to let the emotions cool down in this. The tension becomes almost unbearable. So look into this, deal with it, be very much aware perhaps of what is happening. Be patient, because this type of problem, I find, takes months and months and months to correct. And only if the two people involved, are first willing to commit their lives totally to Christ, secondly, to each other, whether the other person changes or not, thirdly, to the marriage, and fourthly, to come under the authority of the counselor. And then you just have to work through this, and it takes a very long period of time. I, in one case, dealt with 3 years to get a person. And these people were in Christian work. But it took 3 years to reprogram them to a biblical perspective. And, of course, it was discipleship, counseling, and they're really on the ball today. But it takes that. This is a critical area concerning counseling. The seventh year tends to be the crisis year in the absent father syndrome. I don't know why the seventh year, but we've noticed that the seventh year tends to be the crises. It can happen any time, though, before or after. Some people string it out, and about the 20th year, they said, "I've had it." So watch out. Now, what do you do? How do you handle the therapy? To avoid divorce, and I, of course, in our ministry, we never recommend a person getting a divorce. We suggest then to avoid a divorce that the person get a separation for a short period of time under strict guidelines that we set up to get the emotions down. We establish rapport with both parties because one party will feel you favor the other and so on. You meet together the first time and then you're going to have to meet separately for a period of time after that. Now I have down here just some sessions suggested sessions that you might want to follow. They're just general things. A person can write Scope Ministries and get this, and we won't take the time now because you will change them, and it's very hard to write down dogmatically that you will follow this course because of the human dynamic factor. It's very difficult to follow the same type of treatment in every case. You mold it to the person's needs. Okay, now this will, I think, wrap up basically our the absent father syndrome, and next time we're going to then go into the Abba Father series, which then will be rebuilding, or what we call reparenting the father, where we can begin the first phase of building that proper God concept.